The next thing we know, we're dragging the chute in and we're getting fired on from the other side of the swamp, quite a distance, 400 to 500 yards. Bullets were striking the banks all around us and in the water, and as I went underwater with my head to keep myself from getting hit.
I lost my helmet. I had to get somebody else's helmet.
So from somebody who had been killed or?
Maloney's helmet.
My helmet came off. I had to pick up somebody else's helmet later, and one of the fellows on the bank got a direct hit. He was killed.
Maloney.
We got the chute out. We had to leave his body there. The bundle, when we got it back, it turned out it had anything but what we needed.
That's right.
It was a lot of spare parts. There was a machine gun, but there was no ammunition. Another bundle had mortar rounds, nothing but mortar rounds and landmines. None of that equipment we could use. I don't know what
the medical. We're looking for medical supplies and regular. If even machine gun ammunition would have been good, because then you pull the bullets off the belt. Yeah. Another patrol had finally gotten one of the machine gun. Regular ammo.
Oh, those were 45 caliber? You could use them?
No, 30.
Oh, 30. Okay.
Regular standard. 30 ball ammunition.
I don't know what became of the fellow that we left there. I imagine eventually that someone found him and got his body moved out of there. I believe the dead fellow was William Maloney or Borzane.
Yeah. I think it was Maloney.
In other words, two of them were killed, and I don't know which one at that time. Down had already been killed, and I believe also another fellow named Moen.
Moen.
We got back to the Hill 30, and there was quite a bit of casualties laying all around the edge of the field there. They hit us again the next night, and they sent out a patrol into Pinkerville. I believe it was.
Yeah, that was Millsaps. I wasn't on that patrol.
Okay.
Because I had gone on so many, they kept us back and they sent down to attack the town of Pinkerville. That was Lieutenant Millsaps. It's in the history books too.
Okay.
Lieutenant, shot up the town bad.
Lieutenant Millsaps, who was our officer at the time, and Seti Warnicki?
Yeah, that's Warnicki.
What's S-E-T-I? I don't know what that
Sergeant,
is.
Sergeant, S-G-T.
Oh, Sergeant.
Probably it was misprinted.
Yeah, misprinted. Sergeant Warnicki, W-A-R-N-E-C-K-E, had also had taken quite a few of the patrols out, and they went and they struck the town of Pinkerville. They had quite a battle there. It's in the history books. I went out on one patrol. I think there were seven or eight of us. We went quite a distance, and we were going along a ditch, and all of a sudden we heard a man yell, and it turned out it was a lieutenant, and he had been laying there for the two days. He was shot through the legs, and he was pretty well caked up with blood. He lay there and watched German patrols going by, and he covered himself with leaves and brush and just lay there still without making a sound. When he saw us, he just yelled out, so happy, because he could see our uniforms and helmets, and we took him back. He was a lieutenant. I don't know his name, but I don't think he was originally from our outfit. It seemed that most of the heavy fighting was to the north of us at Lafayette.
Lafayette Bridge.
L-A-F-I-E-R-E?
Yeah, Lafayette. L-A-F-I-R-E.
Okay, Lafayette Bridge. There was another unit there, and they were in some battle because day and night you could see the flashes in the sky. It was like the 4th of July. Eventually, our troopers did take the bridge. Later on, I think it was the fourth day, the 9th Division, one of the regiments of the 9th Division finally reached us, and they made the crossing of the bridge. The 9th or the 4th?
9th or 4th, I still don't know. And both of them came up, they were both there.
And that took a lot of pressure off us. We were organized to start to push south, and we headed down to another bridge crossing.
I think it was. I can still just see the town on the other side.
La Bastille?
La Bastille.
La Bastille.
So many names on there. And that, too, we got shells from the coast. Big shells coming in, and a lot of them landing on us. I mean, big stuff. You can hear them screeching through the atmosphere. They come in, and we're over here waiting to cross, and they're hitting the other side, the village on the other side. They blow that village to pieces. Big stuff. I don't know. It must have been guns instead of shells. And we finally got across, and then from there we drove south towards Bopti.
I think it was Creedville.
Creedville.
Okay, C-R-E-T-T-E-V-I-L-L-E.
Even today, I'm not sure which town it was. I could go into the records, because in the records I do have, I got it upstairs, I think.
Okay.
Well, they got it right here.
Yeah,
it tells there what village.
We were ready to make a crossing at night. The engineers had tried to put a pontoon bridge across, and the shelling started coming in. I don't know where it was coming from. It seemed like big stuff, probably coming in from the battleships out in the channel, because the stuff was hitting, and it seemed like all of France was lifting off the ground, and we had quite a few casualties from the shells landing short on us.
We were more afraid of that than we were of the Germans. That big shells come in, boy. That's why I say a desert storm when those poor Arabs got bombed over there. I said, man, I wouldn't want to be in their shoes for nothing. They were ready to surrender. It's nothing like a devastating bombardment. Your nerves get shattered, you shake like you can't stop shaking. People don't understand that, you know. They see the movies and they get bombed, and the guy says, yeah, all right. Well, I guess let's see. We'll open a can of Spain. Like as though it's a joke. Uh-huh.
What is it like, I mean, when you hear the shells?
You're shaking. See, in Holland, we got hit so bad that we crossed the what they call the Netter Canal, the Netter Rhine, which you got two parts of the Rhine there. You got the one up there in Nijmegen and one at Arnhem. Arnhem was where the British were, wiped out. But we finally crossed over and we were going up to relieve them. And that's it. We stopped at Lent or Elst, the town. And then the Germans start shelling us. They even hit the bridge. And this stuff would come in, big heavy stuff. And all of Holland would just pick up like this and come down, you know. And you're shaking. You can't stop shaking. You're safe in that foxhole. That shell's got to come in to kill you. Or come close enough to bury you alive.
But still...
Your nerves get so shattered and you're squatted down in there like this. You know, because you go down, you're in water. You go down further and you drown. And the ground is above you here. And you're shaking. You can't stop shaking. Usually you dig two bunny holes, in other words, two guys in a hole. And that was like Moline, the big Swede, was with me. And I said, you're shaking. You can't stop. Your knees hurt. And you want to stand up because they hurt like, you know, the tension is so high. You want to stand up to relieve that tension. You can't. You had to be above. The shrapnel will take you right in half. Moline, I can't take much more, Moline. He said, well, me neither. He says, I'm going to crack up. I said, no, I'm going to crack up before you. You know, we keep going. You don't even go hours with shelling like that. And then when you finally, it lets up and you get up and you look out, and we were in an orchard, beautiful orchard, you know, whatever they were, apple, pear trees. Uh-huh. There you could swear it was a giant lawnmower come over there and just cut it clean. There wasn't one tree that wasn't just cut to shrapnel pieces. And all that time, I don't think we lost 2-3 men, that's all. Because you had to give them a hole to actually kill them. Uh-huh. The holes would cave in on you, you know, and they just dig the throw the dirt out. But even when it got bad, you'd dig down there and poop right into the hole and throw some mud on it. Miserable. Then your legs itch because you're in there for weeks, and you didn't have to take a bath or nothing. The mud and everything, and it gets like, you know, your skin gets like, I don't know, some kind of an itch. How do you call it? Especially where all your clothes are. It's hard to describe. I'll tell you, boy, you the mind just gets cracks.
Did you see anybody go combat fatigue? I guess you must have.
Yeah, we've had some.
What?
In the town of Weiler, We had one, the stories would take me days to tell. Town of Wyler, we moved off the hill. That there I was on a patrol. I was always on lead scout. They used me and this Mexican kid as lead scout all the time. So that too was Lieutenant Glime also. He was very good as Glime. We went down off the high ground, Bergendahl, which is high ground, 100 feet higher than anything around. That's a mountain over there in Holland. So went down off the high ground, and down through the gullies, into the town of Wyler. It would be like going off of over here in Arlington, going down into the swamps, and then you go out so far, and then it drops down again. The town of Wyler. We didn't know at the time, even until then, long after, that was German territory. That was part of Holland. So they decided to occupy Wyler, small village. On the Don Hoover Road comes from Bergendahl and goes all the way down to Grisbeck. Grisbeck to 504 had taken that. And then beyond that Wyler was the walls, the big woods, forest. And they were afraid that there was armor in there. So, occupied the town. So, me and Glime and the kid, the Mexican, went down in the gullies, get into the town. Walked around the town, nothing. I got even there what happened in Normandy, the same thing. As I approached the scout there, not a thing. Then all of a sudden they opened up. In other words, when you don't hear a cat, a dog, or see a civilian or nothing, you know that's occupied. Because people, first thing, they take their pets and they disappear. They go into cellars, they go anyplace, hide, or leave the village. So the same thing there. Went in the village, I said, Jesus, nothing in there, you know. Went all around, and it went around the edge of the town. It dropped off another like 30, 40 feet down into the polder, the swamp. Uh-huh. And from there, you could all the way over, you could see the bridge at Arnhem, about 8 miles away. And came all around the edge, went over into buildings, a couple of buildings, looked inside. One building, there was some German gear there. And it's strange, you know, because they don't even leave their gear. And then I'm thinking back in Normandy. I start getting, you know, butterflies. I figured there's something wrong in this town. So we went around, went all the way down, came all the way back, and we headed back up to the hill and reported town was not occupied. So they radio back, and I guess headquarters, the Lindquist, says, okay, move Company B down there and occupy it. So just before dark, late afternoon, we moved down, moved into the first part of the town. See, actually, it was a whole town, but we thought there was a double apron barbed wire fence and a trolley line and a road. So we figured, well, that's Wyler, and this must be another town. Then we dug in and set up a roadblock. It was the road coming from the one end was where the Germans were. I had dug a hole. I got it all in the story. Exactly. I dug a hole, right? We set up the weapons. And there was a log, you know, like railroad ties, pile of them. So we just pushed them up nice, and I dug a hole. Figuring what a beautiful parapet, you know. All that's come is a stop. And dig down about this deep, all of a sudden, the ground was real soft. All of a sudden, I hit a jar, glass. I said, son of a bitch, I'm going to get cut. I think I'm throwing a jar at my side. And look, I see money. So I clean out, nice, I pull this jar out, about a big jar, full of money. So I take all the money, hey. Gelders, Kroners, I tell you what the hell. I forgot though. This money is worthless now. The country's invaded. I mean, that's how stupid I was. Now I would know better. I took all that money, rolled it up in a big roll, stuck in a pocket, took all the coins, put it in my steel helmet. I said, what am I going to do with this? So I called the guys, oh, yeah, you give us some money here and there, right? Got rid of it, and I had these two big wads of paper money. Orders come, pull out and move to the other end of the town. So I left the foxhole there and went. I wanted to go back there, see that farmhouse. I figured then people would get me to put me in jail, stealing their money. So anyway, we moved to the other end of the town, and we set up where it dropped off, and I'd taken a grenade. There was a sunken road going down to the lower part, and there was a big field over here, and there was a road coming out of the forest. Had a 57 Bofors over on the lined up at the road. And a couple of men over here, and I was here when I had a
57 what?
A Bofors. That's like a 57 millimeter anti-tank gun, machine gun anti-tank gun. 57 millimeter.
Meter, yeah.
They call them a British Bofors. Beyond that, I don't know. Uh-huh. Anyway, all I know is they fire and they do damage. So then one kid, I told him, get out on the, because I was a corporal now and an acting sergeant at the same time. I didn't have the rank, but I was acting sergeant. I told him, get out on this open spot to see the flank there, because I couldn't see down below. So he dug in over there where he could see. Took the grenade and I took some string out of one of the buildings there. I went in, scrounged, got some string, and I put a grenade, put the pin, anchored the string this high off the ground. Figure anything coming up in the dark, you're gonna trip it. The grenade will go off, mm-hmm. and it's a warning. Also, nail the guy who's coming up. Well, it got dark, everything's quiet. So I figure, well, I'm on the corner over there, and I had a grenade launcher. So I put my grenade launcher on, put the grenade on mm-hmm. top, put the blank shell into the chamber, and I sat there nice and comfortable looking at the road. Comes dawn, it's all like a mist, you know, a heavy mist. You're starting to clear to where you can see, all of a sudden here's a motor coming. A truck comes out of that thing, coming right straight towards us. German truck with troops. Evidently they didn't know we were in there, and they thought it was still their troops occupying in there. What it was, there were Germans in there. We found out the only place they could have been was in the church. They had gone into the church and hid in there when we moved in. This we figured out later. Couldn't figure what had happened. A disaster. In the meantime, everybody's like asleep. You know, it's a nice move. Uh-huh. Morning there, the fog, everything quiet. Well, there's motor coming. So I see him coming, so I anchor my rifle in the M1. Boom! I fire the M1. It falls short. Falls short about 20, 30 feet. He put the brakes on. He stopped. As he stopped, the guys woke up over there when they heard the explosion. They opened up. Boom! Boom! They hit that cab. Germans spilling out. Everybody opened up, machine guns, everything. We must have got at least a half a dozen, and a couple of them escaped. Blew the truck apart. Then we start getting fire. Maybe 15 minutes after that, then they must have realized what happened, what they heard, all the shooting. Then they start shelling us. And they're hitting everything in the town. So we... they start coming across the open ground. But there are a lot of culverts.
Uh-huh.
When you see them come through the ditches and then they jump the culverts where the little roads, like whatever we call them, farm roads. And they were picking them off left and right. And me, I got the M1 and I couldn't fire. It jammed on me. When I fired that rifle grenade, the thing ruptured inside. I couldn't open it up. I had cut my hand all open here trying to get it open. I'm running around the town trying to get this damn thing open. In the meantime, everybody's opening up. The Germans pulled a full-scale attack. They come from all over. I run over towards the church. I get over by the church, and there's Evans and the kid Evans, who's a sergeant and a lieutenant. By then, orders came to pull back and to the other side of the road. Because we were outnumbered there. We only had, I don't think we had 100 men there. And they pulled a full-scale attack. I got over by the church, and as I'm by the church, the German came around the corner, looking straight at me. Now they could have killed me. I'm up against, you know, the parapets on the side of the church to support the walls. And I'm jammed up against there, and I got this thing, and I'm shaking. I couldn't breathe. That's how scared I was. And I'm looking at them, and one of them looking at me, he could see part of me. And he's saying something. Now, whether he saw me or saw the other kid, Evan, I don't know. Everyone was behind the tree, and the lieutenant was a little further over. Now, they couldn't, I don't think they could see them. And he's saying something. Me, I couldn't understand. He's not saying Andy Ho or nothing, but what he was saying, I was so scared. And I put my gun down like this, down on the ground, and then I couldn't. I was bleeding all over here from trying to pull that damn lever. And I stood up on top of the lever. This is all in a second I did this. And I jammed and boom, the goddamn shell went out. They ejected the shell. And I took the rifle up, boom, 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 boom. I emptied the whole clip. And I nailed one of them. The other one, as he went around the corner, I seen him fall. There were three of them all together. The one, two of them came out, and three of them, but then one sort of went back. And all there was two there when I fired. I nailed the one. The second one, I think I'm pretty sure as a hit as he went around the back. Then I start running. Evans start running, and the lieutenant. We were the last ones out of that little part of the village.
Uh-huh.
We go across open field, and there's like a fence, and the fence comes to the Don Hoover Road. At Don Hoover Road, there's a trolley line, double apron barbed wire fence. That's why we thought the double apron barbed wire fence was a border, but it wasn't. And the fence goes right up to a barn. Ran across, bullets flying all directions. Miracle we didn't get hit. All three of us went through the goddamn barn, went over a wall. There was a wall, the other side of the road, there was a wall like about this high, stone wall. The road goes along here, and then they had a wall, and then there was a little gate here to go out onto the road. I went over the road. Believe me, I didn't breathe 1 ounce of breath from after I shot until I got to there. And I think my heart even stopped. That's how fast I was running and how scared I was. And I got over that wall and finally start breathing. You know? And I stood there a minute, and there was Mackie, my friend, he was over on his side. He came over to see how it was. Man, my heart was stopped. And then I had this kid, Ellerbusch, that's what I mentioned. And the next thing, the Germans got into the barn. Followed through and they got into the barn. All along the line there, man, everything opened up. All our guns were opened up. It was one of the most brutal battles we had. And Ellerbusch crawled out in the open. He got out there and he had the bazooka and he fired into the barn. Boom! Into the barn. First didn't do nothing. Put the loader up again, he fired the second. In the meantime, he crawled way out in the open. Boom! He got hit through the side because then he was in the open. The barn caught fire. And at the same time, the British reached us. They're up on the high ground, the British tanks. And they're firing down into the town on us, right? They're hitting the buildings. The buildings there, stone walls, you know, they're made out of stone over there, stone and mortar. Goddamn bricks, stones and everything coming down on top of us. The Germans shooting at us, the barn is on fire. The flames must have gone 100, 200 feet in the air. Germans spilled out. As they're filling out, the guys are knocking them down and shooting. I'm yelling, don't kill them, I want to get prisoners. You know, they motioned them in, they come in. So we took quite a few prisoners.
And the British were shooting it?
And the British are on the hill shooting us. The radio operator, our radio operator, were on different frequencies. He went crazy. He was at the other end with where the captain was. They say he tried to get them, he couldn't get them, and he felt a responsibility. He started going across the open ground to go up on a hill to try to tell them that we're in there. Boom, they nailed him out of the field. They killed him, the radio operator. Finally, after about an hour or so, the British must have realized somehow that they were shooting at us. We were in the town. Then the firing let up. But the Germans and us were still firing back and forth. Now we had, this was late in the afternoon. Now we had to get out of that town. There was no way we could hold. We were outnumbered like 20 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
there was only one solution, get the hell out to the high ground. So orders came to activate all the ammunition, all the mortar ammunition, everything, pull the pins, leave it all there. And I went over, Ellerbush got hit, and I went, he was stone cold. And so I had to leave his body there. But if he didn't hit that barn, the Germans would have crossed that road and behind us. With no place. It was, you know, from the road, you know, our houses are all along the road, maybe one or two deep, and then beyond that, nothing but fields. So it's nothing but wide open land going by. And all haystacks. This is September. Haystacks all over the back. As it started to get dark, we got the German prisoners to wounded, all the wounded we had, the walking wounded walked, and the other guys, we put them on doors, ladders, uh-huh. Anything we could get. Oh, the cowardice, that's what he was bringing, that's what I'm going to bring out. This one kid, Sergeant Vento, good sergeant, up until that point, left his whole squad. And he found them underneath the crawl space, because over there there's no cellars, they're crawl spaces. He's down there shaking like a dog, you know, with a tail between his legs. Mm. He was broken down, and they transferred him out to supplies later on. And I had nothing but contempt for him. But then later on I thought to myself, you know, how many men use every method not to be there? At least this guy went his full measure. He went through Normandy, all the way to there, and then all of a sudden something just went boom. That's it. Something cracked. Battle fatigue, whatever you call it. Later on, I started realizing I had compassion for him.
Now, when
but
you
he
say
left the squad, and most of them were killed or taken prisoner.
When you say later on, many years later, or
no, I'd say later on after the war, we're still in England. Then they start, right. You start to think, you know. And then we had the young punks come in. We were in Germany as occupation troops, and the young punks that never even saw an enemy. Going around, hey, a goddamn crowd, an old man. There's an old man. Could be his grandfather. Get out of here, goddamn crowd. You know, they act to people. I mean, and like we go to the mess hall, we had the three garbage cans, you know, to put the edible, non-edible. You see the old lady there with gray hair, you know, a little kid over there with a bucket waiting to get something. You're not supposed to fraternize or give him none. What, are you kidding? All of us would say, hey, Hans, come over here, Fritz. You call the woman over, give her whatever, you save the potato or something. You know, and you think, hey, could be my mother. Suffering these people went through. But anyway, that guy left his squad, and we finally, they set the, as dark got in, they phosphorus shells, they start setting all the haystacks on fire.
Uh-huh.
And we're going back with these ladders. The Germans carrying too, the prisoners carrying the ladders with our wounded. Having a long file separated, you know, going up the hill. And we finally got to the high ground. And for 2 days, they attacked us with everything. They never dislodged us from the high ground. That was it. That stopped them dead. Some of the battles, they got into history there. The one there at Bergendorf. A lot of casualties, German casualties, and they just couldn't take the hill. Then we were pulled out after when finally the British reached us and stabilized everything strong. But of those tanks that were shooting at us, every one of them was knocked out by German, the 88s. Every one of them was knocked out. As they came up on the knoll, later on they were shooting, ba-boom, they'd nail them right off the thing. Like clay pigeons, you know, the clay pigeon comes up and boom!
Which tanks were these?
The British tanks.
British tanks?
Yeah, they lost, I think it was seven of them. They all got knocked out. Those 88s were accurate. They were like a rifle fire. Then when we moved across the river there, then the same thing, the British, they got so far and then they refused to go any further. Poor bastards up there, the British bastards up in Arnhem. That's it. They were lost. When we finally got as far up into Elst, then we pulled back what finally got through. Guys looked like they were through hell. The eyes were coming out of their head. They lost, out of 10,000 men that were dropped into Arnhem, they lost 8,200 men. After the war, now, you read the book, and this Urquhart, General Urquhart, hid out for 3 days. Now, here's a man that's in charge of the whole operation, the whole brain, the whole thing that has to be done. And he's hiding out in an attic of a farmhouse. Can you imagine that?
No.
No. His job was to get to his command at the bridge where Frost was. Colonel Frost was the hero of the whole thing. He held out there for, what was it, eight, nine days, and then finally had to surrender the whole thing. While Urquhart was hiding out for 3 days, after the war, he was given the Victoria Cross, the greatest honor of the British Empire, because he comes from the royal families of the Urquharts, so, you know, all the way back in the history. Okay? This is the irony. Sosabowski, the Polish general, who was very against the whole operation, the way it had been laid out, he didn't want to land. He wanted to land right on the bridge. You know, they decided we're going to land the troops here and then march to the bridge. Well, you give the Germans all the chance to counterattack. After the war was over, after he lost half of his troops, Sosabowski ended up as a bricklayer in England, while Urquhart was made the king of the war. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
This is the irony, how things work. But that's history.